And what did you think about the Negro leaks? I'm sure you were reporting at that time. Can you tell me anything about that you may be able to go with our interview? Were you familiar much with any of the Negro leaks in Pittsburgh, or?
No, not really. When I came here in 46, Fed played some games in the 30s during the Depression before the war. And I think the Braves come up and the Crawfords come up and played one or two games. And what was notable for me is once that Braves came up, and Josh Gibson, and so on, there was a center field fence down there.
Right.
And they fell to me about 30 feet over the fence and still going.
No kidding.
Yeah, I could see really clear.
Right.
But no, I never saw them play. The only guy that played with the Crawfords was from Madison.
Okay.
Elmer was, you know Elmer.
Right, sure, I know Elmer.
Elmer was probably a teenager then.
Okay.
He was down. He played. Now, Elmer played for the other athletics here 3 years. Probably about 2 years, but the athletics here about 3 or 4 years. We were the best of the amateur crop. A lot of former college players, and more former professional players.
Similar to the Eagle County League now?
No. It was just separate. It was in the Tri-County League.
Okay.
They played like Springdale, and they played Dahlman was great at Pittsburgh. They played a number of teams in the outskirts. It was a league equivalent to the greater Pittsburgh League.
Okay.
They had some major, former major league scholars that played for the same team from New York and whatever. And it was a good league. Brother won it like 3 years in a row.
No kidding.
He had some great ball.
Was Elmer a good ball player?
Oh, yeah. He played second base. He was starting to get involved, and then he was already pushing the late 30s. In fact, you see that we had a lot of good second basemen. Jonathan Kopchick was one. Alan Massey was the second baseman. Roger Kuhn, Dennis Dick Richard Pete played for a year, maybe 2 years. He was the second baseman. He was pretty tough to play quickly.
Then
he tagged the tag and decided to play for smart enough.
No kidding. And did you cover many of these ball games, or did you just happen to follow it?
Games. I covered all the home games. They played either at Fulham Park or Chicago, but the home is now. Of course, the away games, they would call me.
Right.
Peter Wondering's math is impossible to go somewhere in the garden.
Sure.
He had a good former pro, but an Engel Frank. Comer played third base. And John Wicks came up with the Warriors. And he was probably the best base runner I ever saw. And, you know, the amateurs. Not a second baseman. It was Chuck Eakins, I said. It was Chuck Eakins, the shortstop. And the only youngest guy on the team was an 18-year-old kid from Mars, Don Wick. He was just out of high school, and he held his own. And he wanted to go to college, so he was about 2 years.
Right.
In the outfield, they had some outfield ball players. One of them was Boyle Park, who was in our Hall of Fame down there. He played baseball in Cincinnati. And that's where he coached basketball and football team for him. Coached at Boston College, coached at Harvard. Baseball, Harvard, baseball coach at Harvard for 10 years. Really turned administration around to Chicago and hired someone else to leave him.
Wow.
And I saw him hit 2 runs at Fulton Park, which is not on the street. That's just a derby by a couple of feet. He hit the top of the fence. He was a big guy, about 6'3", 6'4", about 220.
Right. Did they have a lot of good pitchers on that team, or?
Not too bad. They had a guy named Anapka who was a former professional. They had a guy named Malia Hamilton who was a top-notch pitcher for 52 years. He was teaching the junior high Butler, so he played. And there was another guy that came from Toronto. I can't remember his name. He was a guy named Mills. A real tall left-handed. telling me of. He was very sure of it. He was a good, came out of high school and he was a good baseball teacher. Lang, Connie Lang, the manager. His brother Joe was a good catcher. Eddie Calderon.
Okay.
Catcher. Barney Barnes, you remember Barney?
I've heard of Barney, yes.
He was in the golf course.
Oh, I know Barney well.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
I'm not too sure whether his son can play football.
Brian.
Brian.
Yes. I knew Brian. He was
Barney,
a couple years older than I was.
Well, they were partners. He batted at the time he was around 40. He was a catcher. So, Barney just showed up on one day. And he just took over the rocks, knocked it out. He was a different catcher. He could throw. He could hit. He was hit. He had better than Ed Calderon. Real nice player.
Right.
In fact, it was a classic team. Ed Kaser, who used to be the director of Shakur, he ran the team. He put a lot of his own money in there to keep it going. But he was sure that he was a good job. Well, he owned the drugstore. He put a lot of time in it. He started shooting the drugs in the war. A lot of traveling, a lot of money. He never did the department at the right time. What hurt the leg was the guy from Springfield. I can't remember his name. It's President Lewis. He worked for the phone company. We could get more than necessary phone calls free of charge. And he retired from work and retired from coaching line. There was nobody willing to take on that task to be touching on the team.
Sure.
It was all over. It was slowly going to get sold up to something that fits for the record. Other things to do.
Right. You mentioned earlier that you were a one-man staff at the paper. And you said that you had started there in 1946. How long were you by yourself before?
About 26 years.
26 years. And were you able to get out and cover many baseball games? Or?
Sure, I went out. Well, in baseball, you know, I covered them. It would start around 6:15, you know, get through about 9 o'clock, the office opened. Particularly in the playoffs, I covered some of the playoffs. I didn't go to college, I only covered the afternoon games. Covered high school first Friday night. In those days, Fortune Lamar's playing on Thursday night, I covered them. I also used to cover three independent teams.
Okay.
One time in my career, I covered 13 straight football games. I covered 13 days.
Right. That's a lot of football.
Oh, that's a lot of football. The Cubs are playing on a Wednesday night and Sunday afternoon. The Cubs and Sandy Sunday afternoon were out drawing by the high school. The greater Pittsburgh was the Pittsburgh Sun Telegraph ran in called semi-heavyweight division.
Okay.
The Cubs won it like 2 years ago. They played teams all over the Pittsburgh area. And, guys were getting out of football because they come out of the service and they were getting married. They didn't want to get hurt because they didn't lose money.
Right.
To cover these. So slowly the leg disappeared and the guys just got too old for it.
Right.
And the younger guys. You
know, how much ball playing did you do as a kid and youngster growing up?
Well, I was mostly in track and a little bit of basketball. Service group and kind of two teams in the band. Two guys got together and we had a little softball team and a basketball team. And we were able to shift them around and play independent teams in the area. Probably the best team we ever played in softball was we played the Cameron Field, which was a national champion 2 years in a row. And then about a minute ball, we went to an accident. Yeah, he played it three times, he did once.
Right. Uh-huh.
That was known as information. I didn't play high school. Yeah, I didn't do a lot. They're the same guys that I grew up and played football with. They're on the team. I would have been riding there with me.
Right.
On the same street, there were five of them on the football team. I would have been the sixth guy. And we just grew up playing each other. Okay, I know how things are, and slow, and everything. So, boy, I had hard times with this and that. In fact, I went out to football for 2 days. You know? I had to take the football game. My dad signed it.
That was it, he said
that
it.
That was it. Yeah. And then the track, I should have just been in the cab, and I did like pitching on softball. And of course, what I was doing those days, they are two different things, you know.
Sure.
The average athlete,
right. Yeah, everybody's getting bigger now.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you grew up eating 7 hours food during the depression, you know, you eat that wholesome food, you ain't going to have a pig.
Right.
Victory that day, or when that day was to put a meal on the table. You know?
Sure.
It was a railroad town, 20% unemployment. Actually, more than 20, national unemployment. We were about 40%. Obviously, most of the people worked in the railroad.
What made you get into to journalism, and what brought you to Butler?
Well, I worked in a automotive sports factory. Undergraduate center, Penn State undergraduate center in Du Bois, which is close to junior college here. I'm pretty sure it was in the cellar of a public school in my second year. They took over John E. Du Bois Mansion. He died and moved to college, and they made it big enough to connect there about 200 students. Considering that we had about 40 going to the cellar campus. That was my first year in the campus. So they didn't have any sports. They had some basketball, but it was nothing to speak of. So I went on a campus when I was a junior, so I was too late to go out there. I had grown from about 145 to about 175 or 80, which was the best to do. You go to college, you want to get your grades, you know.
Sure.
Of course, the first 2 years that I went to home, I stayed at home. And I went up to San Jose and I needed to spend a bit of a job like that. But anyhow, I got into scientific. And I didn't have a scientific background in high school. I had no math, no algebra, no chemistry. So I tried to cancel it all up. I was just resolutely battled with the person. That's why I pushed a little large. Anytime my sister had moved out of town, she went to talk about Mary. She had a company she was working with, and she was in charge of the branch office. I don't know what I want to do. She's the one who really should have gone to college. She was a straight A student. She wanted to. Not that I was dumb or anything. I'm a BC student writing requirements up there.
Right.
And she said, you know all the nice letters you write, you know, and she said, what if you like to write? You write real well. Why don't you take up journalism? And then I got into journalism. So that's what I did for journalism.
Were you involved in sports in journalism right away or another?
No. I had the class. I was carrying 21. I did work for the town newspaper for one semester. I was going to work for them on a course. I did some just straight news for them. I was just on service. I couldn't get a job, they might observe it when he was going to get a 4F card. I couldn't see that, even though my eyesight kept me out, because I didn't have a 4F card. I went around here and there. I went up to Buffalo and saw Longo there, the first place I tried it. The Buffalo even knew me, the guy said, he's not likely to get a job right now. He said, you show me a 4F card, he's going to get a job. He said, I'd rather hire a girl, so I stay here for 3 or 4 years and have you come here and learn the business for 4 or 5 months, and you can go away and serve. So I worked for Bell Aircraft up there in the assembly line, not the assembly line, but the shipping line. And you're at the mercy of those. I took basic training twice. Sent me to a Jewish school twice. Because I was tall and a college graduate, the CEO wanted to make me a drill instructor, which I didn't want to be, and I wanted to go to the school. And I came very close to getting a public relations job at Allen Station on the beach. And the major who was in charge of that particular thing had me all lined up to go there, and he could transfer. But they didn't have it in after that. And they finally put me on the drill field, and I got off the drill field, and I got on the called beach guard, had a guard the beach was punched back. It was a good job, and then I worked 10 hours, 4 days, and got a straight intake and asked to go to Miami right away, so, for all the other guys. And finally, that started, the beach started breaking up, and they started breaking the guard up. But he's a drill instructor, I'm a drill instructor, so. And finally, from drill instructor, they shipped me up to Smith Field. And I got into coding, decoding, ciphering, deciphering, which is really much more interesting. But I never did that before when I went overseas because I had the guys in the Navy had the same thing, and they were the second lieutenant, and I was a corporal. I was in the Air Force. The Air Force didn't give them kind of any good officers. I did odd jobs there until I thank you. My boat trip over to Seattle to Guam was 39 days in a little Dutch freighter. Let me tell you, I had a couple of lights secured.
Wow.
We were by ourselves most of the time. We had several warnings about half a dozen times off in 2 or 3 days. Nobody could protect us. All the 2 weeks of venom was 4 and a half, you know. We didn't do anything. You know, the Marines would show up. We only had 2,000 troops. So we were really dead ducks. Luckily, we made it over. Same trip back over on a Victor ship of 2 weeks, unfortunately. We just meandered all over the Pacific. Over there, I did odd jobs for 3 months. And I was the first sergeant had it in for me. Built mess halls, built the trees, and went back. And finally, I went over to the headquarters and put communication there. It was a minor job. And what I'm going to do. And we kind of felt that something big was going on. You know, just all of a sudden, we started seeing a lot of big leaks coming in the headquarters. Everything was real hush-hush. Nobody was talking about this. That went on for about 3 or 4 weeks, and finally we discovered why. You know, the atom bomb was dropped in the Marianne by Indian and Black. That's why all this communication was hush-hush. They weren't trusting me to be the fourth and all that. That's what the first big disaster.
Sure.
But we knew there was something big going on, and we were trying to figure out what it was, and we thought maybe it was an invasion of Japan, you know.
Uh-huh.
Bomb that just lost minutes. It wasn't good for Japan, but it saved a lot of American lives.
Sure.
I didn't know how the people feel about it. If you're out there, you know, you want to be nice to go, you know, it feels a little different, you know.
Right.
Not the right thing to do, you know, kill a lot of people, but then they get the same thing done. I just got the thing on the news today that the Japs finally apologized for bombing Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. Long time overdue.
Long time, yeah.
Right. No kidding. In covering all the baseball games that you have in the years past, who would you think were a number of the better high school players in the area that come to mind for you?
It would have to be a little one-sided. Obviously, the ones that I covered were mostly from the high, and I picked up some of them in the Eagle County League and the County League. And they were really more adult than high school teams in those two areas. You probably didn't get the baseball. I should have moved to 55 or 60 in the year. So they had 15 years about it. I think they got rid of baseball like late 20s, early 30s, didn't have it for about 30 years. And they finally got it. Some of the better ones are the best. On kid and people with the pros.
Okay. What was his first? Eric or John?
Eric.
Eric, yeah.
That's the umpire's brother.
Okay, yes.
Eric was the ball player in the next state. I don't know whether he's still the pros or not. He has a move to the pros. I'm not too sure. I don't really think there's enough speed for top
notch. That's a different level. A lot of people think that, you know, now and then you find a kid that can throw 90 miles an hour, and they think that makes him a pro pitcher. But you better have more than that to go around.
Of course, the one kid that can throw 90 miles an hour is
that Clement. That Clement.
He did the program before now.
Right. Okay. He's from San Diego, correct?
San Diego, right.
Right.
John Gristar was a pickup catcher for others. Always seemed to have come up a little good catcher. There were a lot of good players. A lot of offers. He learned early on to pitch the legal ball, and his brother was a catcher, so they practiced a lot. They were both
quite a battery, huh?
It was a good time. I never saw a lot of hard work in high school. He developed real well. I saw him play the legal ball. We should do so.
Okay.
I don't think he played basketball, but I think he finished the fourth game here.
Would that be his son or nephew that is a linebacker up at Flipper on top?
No, nephew. That would be the one that's a linebacker, but his father's a barber down in Florida. Monty or something. I don't think Monty played any football. He's older than me. I think Monty was a teacher. But Rich was a backup guy. He was a punter. He was a swimmer, a guy. He was a baller. He was a baseball player.
Right. How about Eddie Vargo?
Eddie Vargo?
Yeah.
He didn't play any baseball for college. He played football. He was a real strong runner. I don't know why he stayed away from baseball. I think he played some leagues of ball, and he was pretty good. I never saw him play. He was just a good athlete. He was right size. He was close to 6 foot. He was a really strong kid. I don't know whether or not he didn't want to play with his father. He was involved in baseball movement. And he was a good baseball player himself. He was a catcher, but he didn't have a very good arm. When I say not a good arm, I mean for the pros.
Right.
They're very particular people who spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to get into a guy on the second base. It's all part of the game.
Right. Sure.
So maybe with his umpire. Played with KRM and Kansas, Oklahoma, Missouri, which was the Cardinals. He was on the national. Which is one of the five ones in the country.
It's a pretty tough road to.
Oh, pretty tough. He was fortunate in the cars to get him. But he was also good. He had really the right temperament for an umpire. He didn't. I don't know whether you ever heard of any horn.
No, I haven't.
down there and Eddie Horn went to school before. I think the bar's on. Eddie got him into school with his bar. He's still at the camp now. That's how he determined his name. Eddie Horn went first and Eddie Barnum went second. Horn was an excellent umpire in baseball. But he didn't have the temperament for it. To cut him down, the fans, the managers.
You have to have a thick skin.
Oh. Connie had to give that to him. I mean, I'm sorry he didn't make it because he was a good umpire. He went down and covered a I went down with him. He said, I'm not going to cover an umpire game down in Pirates. It's Cleveland and the Pirates had two exhibition games a year. One in Cleveland and one in Pittsburgh. And all times went to amateur ball in the area. So I don't know whether you know a guy named Dale Mitchell enough to play. No, he doesn't fall for Cleveland. I'm talking about he was a good hitter, a slap hitter. I think he could hit 300. And that's when he finally started to go with ball players and back up roles. So when he played, when Cleveland played down here, they put Dale Mitchell to play first base and try to get him familiar with the team. He made a tag on first base and then he called him to safe. And he told him, he said, you missed the bag. This is like the third inning, 6th or 7th inning. Mitchell missed the bag again, and he called him safe. All good, he we were riding back. Anybody say, well, if anything you can think of, he called me.
Right.
And he said, I was going to throw him out. I said, but it was an exhibition game. People came to see him playing everything. And he wasn't out of there to throw him out. He said, if it's been a regular game in the county, he would have not even looked out for the
right actually. That takes a pretty special person to keep somebody in there under those circumstances.
In fact, the guy who umpired second base, Eddie umpired first, the guy who umpired second base, Connie made it for movie. He was one of the baseball moves in Hollywood. The Greater Pittsburgh Association down here, Eddie was with them. He had a lot of games down here. Good. He asked Eddie what was the experience for him.
What do you think of the money that the ball players are making now and the demands that they're putting forth?
Of course, they're probably right, and of course the owner's probably right, but I think the basic foundation of what came on the time that I see those owners, a lot of money started making, that's a lot of money. So as soon as they see this guy gets a lot of money, they're going to hold out for the money. Standard are probably to buy a pennant and talk to all the guys, and after they got so much of it, they started getting more and more. I think probably one of the places that save a lot of money, and probably I think the same thing in pro football and basketball, is to get these guys off the college campus. They haven't got one up foot out in major league, they haven't scored a basket in the NBA, they haven't gained a single yard in the National Football League, and they're getting $5-6 million a year contract. And the guy who's been at 5, 6, 7 years, including himself, he belongs there. He's getting less than half of that,
right?
And it's not fair to them, you know. And, so naturally, they may go for more. And there's only so much money in the city.
Turns into a vicious cycle.
It's a vicious cycle, right? And I'm surprised that the players don't see that, and they don't just back off a little bit. But they just are very mean. I just saw that baseball stuff that Burns has, you know. That you could only stay with one team, and then they don't want you to three out. And that was the other end of the spectrum, you know. And in those days, 30, 40 years ago, you know, the guy was with the Giants would be with the fan 15 years unless you traded.
Right.
You knew all the teams, all the bad orders. Now you don't know who's going to make the league next year.
Sure. Yeah, it's like a merry-go-round.
That's right. I mean, you can't sign, but I can't show this number. It's not fair to him now, because he's making like a $3 million a year. Obviously, he's not going to make that when he goes somewhere else. Well, he's going to have to make the team, and then he's going to have to go to another contract. And some of these guys, they come back after making a couple of million, maybe they make $300,000 a year. And then they still have to prove themselves, otherwise they're out.
Right.
So it's bad. I think they ought to fix it at both ends of the spectrum, not the guy in the middle, like Bobby Barnes. The guys are in their prime, who demand all the money, they're going to get it.
Right.
The guy who's coming in off the high school or college camp, I think he has, should have a living wage. I think they've pushed up another 22,000 euros. I think it's very good for
right.
a lot of money. And the way they treat the free agents after, like a Andy Vance Life and all of the other men. Same thing with Dave Winfield. This guy can go for all kind of liquor. He's been a rich guy like me. He's out there in his own time, can't tell him. He can still play, he can still help, but he's a million-dollar baby that may lose his chances at all kind of liquor.
Right. Well, what you're seeing anymore is a lot of the players that, you know, that are asking the money, people won't pick them up and they'll take somebody who's less of a ball player because they can pay them less money. And, you know, and the other thing that I see a lot is you've got guys that are average ball players that are making spectacular money. You know, it's not just the great ball players anymore making the great.
Get in there unless you have a season ticket. I don't have to have it as a relative, and they tried for a week to get a ticket to one of the big ball games. I can make money if all you see is 45,000.
Right.
It's not even like the Pirates are talking about building a stadium. Well, football seats almost 60,000. They're talking that the baseball stadium will seat around 45,000. And I don't think it's really enough. Like the Phillies, they play a three-game series, and they could host to 200,000 people for a little bit of series. The Pirates played the Phillies over here with a big series. They didn't even draw 100,000 people.
Right.
And it's good one way and not good another, you know, and talking about the obviously, they need a new stadium because I've been to see everything. It's not much involved.
No. I think one of the other philosophies behind it is people enjoy going somewhere that there's a lot of excitement generated, you know, like eating at a small restaurant that you always have to wait in line to get into. And, you know, that adds a little bit of mystique. And, you know, I know I've been to some ball games down in Three Rivers. I take my little boy and, you know, there's nobody there. And, you know, it's not as exciting, you know, as when you go and you're in a packed house. I know I've heard some people say that, you know, that might be the reason for the smaller stadiums, not so much for the big series, but for the everyday crowd.
I know that coming back to professional baseball, I remember when the Yankees were starting to fold up, and Pittsburgh signed Bob Pettit for $100,000, his first big bonus game he got. For $100,000, the Pirates could have run the entire middle of the league. They could have had an option. All the ball players got more out of that. Sold some of the ball players to other teams who wanted to get the other outfielder, catcher, what have you. They could have, kept him. Bob Pettit, they'd give him a dollar's worth of value, you know. Right after the war, you know, tennis started to fall. The average GI came out of World War II. He was no longer the farmer kid that he went in the late 30s and early 40s. They were off the farm and bought them. They didn't know anything. And I met a lot of them. I was calling me baby. I was one of the two. I came from a good place, a small town. Well, at least I've been to college and I've seen some of the world here and there. You know, I've been to college. Somebody's got to come off the farm. First time I've been off the farm. Training for 4 or 5 months to send them overseas to shoot somebody and have somebody shoot the pins out. But after that was a long war, you know, just like the golf war was 30 days. They covered the whole lot of overseas for 3 years. There are guys in World War II that overseas 3 years.
Right.
You know, and they were in a line for a long, long time. And they really had a reason to go punch drunk, you know, and shell shock and stressed out. Whatever they can back, they were used to some better things, you know. They would go to France or England or whatever they would see the big city and see the wonderful architecture and what have you all over, new guys from different places. They had an idea of what the world was about, so they came back. Why would they go see the Yankees play? Maybe drive 30 miles down the road. got those rinky dinks from the last Ricky had. And three or four guys that didn't belong to baseball, let alone the major league. They were traveling down there about hundreds and hundreds of you. 5, 6 o'clock in the evening, some cars go one up another down to Phillips Field to the parking. They wanted to go, and Isaac Hare said, two out of four are probably former GIs who wanted to go down here to see the park. A lot of used to go up to Cleveland and watch Cleveland play, but they were a hot team then. They had Bobby Feller and two other women. The Yankees came in and couldn't find a place to sit. I went up there one time on July the 4th, and the Yankees played, and 7,500 people in the stadium. And I know damn well that at least 1,000 people from the Butler area, Western Pennsylvania,
right,
more, had gone up there. And most of them, there were more people going to Cleveland, even though it's shorter, to watch a good team play than they played the Yankees or some of the other teams. And a Pittsburgh, but Pittsburgh got their share of money. And it's just, and as a result, the major minor league started to disintegrate. They didn't make more money than they were. Well, I'm not familiar with that kid's issues. After a lot, there was a lot of women that worked in mills in World War II. And the war ended, they stayed in their jobs, you know, raised families at home. And one would go here and there. The father would stay home and the wife was working, what have you. So the ability to do some extra things sometimes was covered by that. But, Major leagues kept growing, growing, growing. Of course, they got the black athletes, and they were so good. They started getting a lot of black people.
Sure.
But you can't blame them. It's right. Go down there and watch the Dodgers play when they had to do it. You can down there growing, growing, growing. And they have more black people than the Dodgers can be. They have to keep it behind them. They would stand up and share with Jackie to help. They were real happy. And then we would sit playing, sit down their fence, and they would sit down, you know. And, you know, like again, I say, you can't blame it, it's one of their own, and they good.
Right.
They should have been in the major leagues a long time ago.
Sure.
Guys like
Satchel Paige.
Satchel Paige and all these guys.
He missed his prime playing in the Negro Leagues.
How can you say one guy's the greatest ball player in the world? Probably five. They talk about Babe Ruth. Josh hit more home runs than Babe Ruth. He hit like
right.
75 or 80 one year.
Right.
And then how do you spend your safe and say, well, he didn't bat against the same pitchers.
Sure.
Because they were probably a little, the talent's probably more thinner and what have you, but you could play baseball and something you can argue, like they used to always argue who's better, Joe DiMaggio or Ted Williams. Or who's better, Mickey Mantle than Willie Mays. One argument after another, it depends which team you're rooting for.
Sure.
I saw Willie Mays playing and Mickey Mantle, and I thought they're both big ball players. I always favored Mickey because he was a switch hitter and he had a lot more power than him.
Right.
Two hardest baseballs I ever saw in my life were Mickey Mantle. And they're well suited against pitching.
Uh-huh.
So, he creamed two. And he hit one, I couldn't get more than 30 feet off the bat, and I was sitting in third tier. Level of my eyes. I swear I just like to say a can of corn out there. So I think it looks like that. Very Bill Burton. I saw he's not even moving. He's got it. And I found out why he wasn't moving. The ball was a home run.
It was
it cleared that gate by 10 feet. It was on a line, on a
right.
line. Slimmer to what maybe Josh Gibson did down here.
Uh-huh.
And center field and Phillips Field is enormous, you know. It's
right.
And then he hit another one. He just missed that. Hit into the stands about 10 rows back there. Center field, you know, right just about where the cavity is, where the gate was. And he had two tremendous home runs that night. I've never seen a baseball. It's nothing to just look. He had taken care of himself physically. He had good legs. He would have put up records that nobody would have touched.
Right.
If Doug Woodings hadn't spent 5 years in the service, he would have put up records. He and Mickey Mantle went that all the way.
Correct.
Just no soft effort, but he was super splendid. He had switch running. Dodger and Fox played. That is one out here. Never saw Babe Ruth.
Were you ever able to see Satchel Paige pitch? No.
Except on
I've done some research on him, and you know, they claim that he has over 25,000 strikeouts, and you know, I mean, a lot of it is somewhat hearsay, you know, in there, but they claim that the Crawfords are like 260 wins to 120 losses against the major league teams before, you know, and they used to play 3-4 ball games a day for, you know, for $10 or $15. That's amazing.
I know there's a story about Johnson Page where he's pitching and calls the office and he strikes out the bat. What a crazy one. He'd come up and tell the batter what he's throwing, still strike out.
Right.
He seems unbelievable. I mean, I'm talking to the batter. There is a big difference. The way you, I can't say they're right, I can't say they're wrong, but I never saw them play. There is a big difference between a football player and a baseball player.
Sure.
Some of the talent we saw playing out when they only had 2 or 3. Very thin, you know. I remember a guy that played, talking about it, there was a pitcher, Bill Elliott, who played Class A ball, Class A ball. In the 50s, when he went AAA of you now. He played 40 sports, and he was like, tied the chain. But he had a deep comeback from the pros and fights. He was a homesick. He didn't want to end up with him. He was a himself. He could have made a major league. He was a mental attitude for a lot of people. Thought. But he pitched in the greater Pittsburgh League one time. He pitched against Paul Wynn.
Okay.
This is after Paul Wynn had been charged with fires and playing for Dormont. He was like 42 years old. But Paul Winter was noted for being able to do. Bill Elliott went down on a fish and he saw Paul Winters and how he walked. That's how inebriated he was. He said, well, I'm never going to worry about him today. He's drunk. He can see the ball.
Right.
He says, I was really mistaken. He said, he had 3 hits out of 4. So you see, he was a great one, you know, and his
right.
Brother was a great one. He just some guy, that ball looked like a tomato, you know, didn't like a softball. Great eyesight. Probably the best eyesight anybody ever had. That's why he's such a good pilot. It was just an eyesight. Perfect.
Yeah, you got to pick up the ball quick. That's what they, that's exactly. So they look like tomatoes. What do you see today as far as baseball and the community with the young kids? Do you think it's growing or do you think it's stepped backwards in the time that you've observed it?
Well, I can't say it's gone back because I think it's reached a saturated point. And they're doing basically the same thing that 20, 30 years ago. The only thing wrong with sometimes is the parents get so totally involved. Now, it's good to get them involved with the kids to make it so totally involved, make it possible for somebody to umpire or somebody to manage. And I've known a lot of good guys, a lot of good umpires, a lot of good managers. After 2 or 3 weeks of it, they finally feel the talent and they say, well, kids are great, but I just can't take the parents. And I'll give you a good example. Early on, like in the middle 50s, and started day one, you know. Day one with him, John, he was 90 to be an all-star, an all-American one, and he called me. His boy signed a contract with the pros, he was going to be there to make sure he signed a good contract. His boy is 10 years old, he's always talking about him signing a pro contract.
Right.
Lucky to make the team, you know, let alone.
Sure.
But anyhow, they got the playoffs down here, and there's 2 other teams. I don't remember which one they were, but the fans gave the umpire a hard time. Connie Ligon got so severe they had to call the game off. In fact, not only called the game off, they called the entire playoff series off. So the kids left, went over, and there was 2 diamonds down there. They were over to the other diamond. Key guys from both teams, players. It wasn't my argument, I wasn't going to write them on any kind of an argument, but most of the arguments were kind of ridiculous. But I finally opened my mouth and I told them, I said, you realize what you people are arguing about? I said, you're costing your kids a chance to play baseball. I said, look over the other ball diamond over there. I said, who do you see playing over there? The same teams that were supposed to play in Diamond 1, they were over there in Diamond 2. They were playing a game, no doubts no umpires, no nothing, and they were having a lot of fun laughing and hugging each other.
Right.
And,
right.
And I said, that's what it's all about. I said, it's supposed to meet each other, know what it's all about. I said, sure, you want them to win. I said, but you're not going to do something for not winning.
So many parents get involved to see that, as you just said, that little Johnny benefits.
Right.
It's not so much that the kid has a good time. They try and live their lives, you know, through their children. You know, I see that a lot coaching, you know, high school football. A lot of the kids that play for me, they realize that maybe they're not the best ball player on the team. But their dad will come and tell you, you know, he ought to be doing this and he ought to be doing that. And it's an embarrassment to the kid, you know, and because he knows his place. And very few coaches that you know, that aren't in it for that type of gratification. You know, you're not going to play one kid over another that isn't as good or vice versa. It's a shame to see because I've seen what you've said. I see a lot of good people get out of it, you know, because never the kid. It's always because of, you know, the adults and the abuse that they take.
He was a good baseball man. And all the other guys were good baseball men early on. They had to leave, and they finally started getting some women coach, and guys, and some fathers, and money coaching, but they good players as soon as he got through playing, whatever. They didn't know anything about baseball. If you're going to teach them something, I think you're going to have something more fall for it. Just, I don't know how it is now, whether the kids are more fall. I suppose after a period of time, as you coach every 2 years, you're going to learn something both ways. It's just a tough situation, clash of personalities, and it'll never be any different. It's the same all over. I mean, I think it's the same in England now. You talk to a guy, you know, Tracy, his brother lives in England. His brother's a sports editor of one of the towns in England, about the size of about a reasonable figure. So they don't play little big baseball out there, but they play soccer, rugby, and everything else. And I told Nemo, I said, my job here, and what happened, I get phone calls and letters about little Johnny not getting this and not getting that. And he said, well, my brother comes in on vacation this summer, I'll call you. The guys can match it up. Well, he came in, he's about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I called him. Then Nemo, next time I did see Nemo, he said, I did talk to my brother about your situation. He said, he has exactly the same thing, same problems there. And then on TV one day, the guys are talking, they have sports in Africa. And the people who run them have the same problem that the parents have. It's something that will never go away, but parents being parents, they love their kids, and they can't blame them for that. They want the best for them. But you just have to learn when you start out that in some way you can reach them, control them. Have maybe the kids talk to their parents, you know, about, you know, you embarrass me or whatever, you know. And, I've had kids that quit because they're being sure. I've seen that also. And, which is not right. He's making the sacrifice to keep his parents down. He wants to play ball, but because it's so bad, and then he comes home and listens to his mother and father argue. Even they would argue themselves, you know, about how to do this and how to do that. And, the kids are just it's not quite as bad when you get a little older age. Like they babysit them little enough. Like the Pony League is coming over, when they just drive them down and drop them off and pick them up. So in a way, you still are babysitting, but at least the parents aren't there to abuse and fish them.
Right.
And then soon they learn how to drive, you don't see them. They want to drive a car, they don't want to play baseball. Maybe they're at least a bad ball player. Also do some good ones.
Certainly.
But it's human nature in this thing. I don't know what's going to happen in this fight. The owner started it in some way. I think they have to back off over somewhere. The ball players have to back off over somewhere. This case, stand still and say, this is it, you know. Because the fans deserve better. I just hope that, maybe this is a stupid thing to say, I just hope that after the founding get together, Major League Baseball resumes, and suddenly one day the fans say, this is our day. We're going to go on strike.
Right.
Every stadium in the United States has no one. The owners have no funds coming in. Baseball players look and see, oh, look, you know, we didn't think these people were what are we doing here, you know.
Okay.
Maybe that'll awaken them a little bit, you know. But it's not going to happen. Just like one ball game that played down in Texas. The radio station is running a program all day long. Yeah, but the first, the top of the third inning came by. They wanted everybody to stand up and leave the stadium. This is the point of the strike. All day long, they were hitting. So it was on ESPN, and I didn't realize they could do that, but they announced ahead of time this is going to happen. So at first, the third came up, and all these people started leaving. And I said, boy, this is great. I said, look at all those people leaving. Next day, I found out in the paper that they only had the camera on the people that were leaving, but all the people weren't leaving. Of all the people that were in the stadium that day, around 35,000, only 300 left.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, if you can't get through to the people,
right,
how are you going to get through to the owners and the ballpark?
Sure.
I would have been wondered if I would have been 301 because I would have left.
Right. Well, they need to realize somewhere along the line that, you know, the game isn't just theirs. You know, they're entertainers, and,
right,
you know, and as much and all as everybody deserves what he or she is worth, they're, you know, they're going to make it. That, you know, you try and go to a Pirate game, if you have a family, it's near impossible. You know, I have two young boys, and for my wife and I to get down there, to eat on the way down, to park, to go to the ball game, to get a couple hot dogs, drinks, you know, buy each one of the boys some kind of souvenir and come home, we got to spend over $100. You know, and we're not in a position that we make that kind of money. That, you know, it used to be a dad could grab his son, they could go to the ball game, spend the afternoon or the evening, and, you know, it wasn't a lot of money, and it was a, you know, it was a time to bond and get together, and it's not that way anymore.
I know it's expensive. I'm not my son,
okay.
I know one round of hot dogs, if it didn't happen to me, so I see hot dogs, three Pepsi, four Pepsi, it's frozen.
Right.
That's what kind of ball game tickets, and if you want a hot dog or popcorn, like that,
right,
you know, you have it. So, I can believe it's $100 or more. I'm always asking the ordinary guy to do that.
Right. Last year, my wife and I went, and we ended up sitting behind a large family, a man, a wife, I think they had five kids, and each one of them had bought some kind of ball cap or shirt, and they all had programs, and they were constantly running to the concession stand, and we were about halfway through the game, and she said to me, I wonder what he does for a living, because, you know, there we were, like I said, we had taken two boys, her and I, and we, by the time the night was over, we were going to lay down $100, $120, and they were in an extreme. You know, you might have been talking $250 for this family to go to the ball game. And that's ludicrous.
Ludicrous. I don't know. Of course, a guy like Bobby Bonilla possibly the most $80,000 a day. He can afford it. I just, like one of the vendors that we walked out, really wanted to strike me. He said, I do this not as a living, he said, but I need the money. He said, good second income. I do it for the season. And he said, I'm not too good for something. All I can say is this, I hope the strike is on long enough so those ball players have to block any shot. He was not very happy about it. There is another half of the world. What other job do you go
that you
did for free when you were
younger
anyway.
He's out of college, and before you even do a day job for IBM or anybody, he said, well, we're going to give you $5 million a year and a $10 million bonus. I could just see IBM doing that.
Right.
They start at the bottom, then they get a promotion to work on, if they produce.
Right.
A 220 hitter is not a productive hitter. One of the pictures early on a couple of years ago, his record was like 5-12. You know, three teams breaking a nickel sign, and he got $1 million contract.
Right.
And I thought, geez, the old days of Burns fishing, some of the old owners, why, he never would have been in the majors when there were 16 teams in major league.
Right.
I just, her values, I don't know whether they're the same or not. I don't know. I enjoy baseball, but I don't miss it.
Right. I think a lot of people feel that way. It was nice to have, but it, you know, when you know the issues and you're not ignorant to all the facts, it makes things a lot different. So.
I'm not even a hockey fan. I don't know what else is interesting. Now, the NBA, of course, that's only one job. You're still working. And you have the football. And I suppose they're going to get one in this year. I've watched the basketball this year. I've watched 3-4 football games in their entirety, like I did last night with the students. But I turn on NBA basketball. I like basketball. I think it's interesting. All the games I've turned on, about 7 or 8, I've never watched one for more than the total of 1 quarter.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's not a feat to have a 7'2" guy dunk a ball and just go straight down to the basket. I mean, that's not an accomplishment. I appreciate maybe a play that accomplishes that, but to see somebody that tall dunking a ball, it doesn't take any talent.
Right. Well, it wasn't too long ago with the NBA that, everybody couldn't dunk a ball. And I think they just said recently that there's nobody in the NBA that can't dunk a basketball.
I don't know.
A couple years ago, there was a white guy. He was a guard down in Houston, couldn't. And last year, they said, that everybody could. Everybody could dunk the ball, and you've lost a lot of the guys that can shoot. A lot of the skills have went by the wayside.
Well, I think that some people suggest that this is a 3-point play. Dunking the ball would be 1 point.
Right.
And they won't do it because the fans like it.
Sure.
I'd like to see the bag murder the hoop.
Right.
I'd like to say it makes away a lot of skill. Even if guy was 5'8 to play for Atlanta, he could dunk the ball.
Muggsy Bogues or Spud Webb?
Spike Webb.
But, yeah.
He could dunk a ball in 12. In fact, he was in a dunking contest and almost won it.
Right.
Yeah. I think.
That's amazing. Well, listen, I'm going to let you go here.
Yeah.
I certainly appreciate your time, and I'd like to get together with you sometime and just talk about it.
If you think of anything when you're gone, about it, just to be glad you come home.
Okay. That'd be great. Okay. Super.